Welcome to Day Zero Update for May 14th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Logi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a big week this week as one of the biggest releases of the year hit. With The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
Finally releasing, and people could finally figure out, like, what the hell this game is.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a bunch of news with your May PlayStation Plus game catalog lineup. There's a new beta coming for Street Fighter VI. We got some releases here, a couple of delays, and we finally found out sort of what to expect out of that weird Nintendo Live event that is happening later this year. But yeah, let's see. We got an idea of what Game Freak is working on next. Some more turmoil going on at Activision Blizzard.
Yep.
As well as some new news on the Annapurna Interactive game Open Roads and the development changes that have happened over there. So before we get to that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. For me, mostly been playing The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. We'll talk more about that in a bit. But the other game I've been putting some time into is MLB The Show 23. I've been playing a bunch of that. And they just hit their Season 2 for their Diamond Dynasty mode, where one of their big sort of program additions is Kaiju to the game. Not necessarily that you can, like, play as, you know, big monsters and whatnot. They have the custom stadium creator thing. They've added a bunch of Kaiju for that. None of them licensed, as far as I know. They're a bunch of, you know, sort of generic stereotypes of, you know, giant insects and, you know, Godzilla-like creatures and stuff like that that you can have hanging around in the background of your stadiums. That kind of stuff, that's pretty fun, as well as some specific ones that they tie to some of the major players in the game. So that's cool. But that's been pretty much it for me there outside of Zelda. We'll talk about that more in a bit. So, Brandon, what have you been playing?
Well, I will be playing Tears of the Kingdom as soon as it arrives in the mail tomorrow. And if you're wondering, like, well, why didn't I just, you know, do it online and download it? I don't really trust Nintendo when it comes to their digital stuff, so I prefer to get the physical version when I can. And that's just what I did. But in the meantime, before it comes here, I have been playing, I played and finished Deathloop. And of course, with Deathloop, you know, the whole sort of point of that game is you're a dude on an island locked in a time loop, and the only way you can break the loop is by killing all the other visionaries in a single day. But of course, there's a bunch of them. There's like 8 of them in total, and there's only 4, you know, stages of the sun and moon, I guess you could say, you know, morning, noon, afternoon, and evening. So basically, you have to go through several loops sort of trying to find ways where you can arrange events in just the right way so that you can get all of them, get as many of them killed as possible in a 24-hour period. And eventually, what it ends up leading to is you end up finding a way to kill one guy off screen. You go and mess with a dude's experiment, so he ends up at a party later on that evening. And then you have to track down these 2 other visionaries who are actually having an affair and kill them while they're in the middle of their, you know, thing in this bunker that's like deep underground. And then finally, at the very evening, you can kill the last 3, and then, well, I won't spoil it, but yeah. It's really amazing how everything kind of comes together at that game's end. And how there really are, like, a number of ways you can go about some of this. I mean, obviously, you can do the basic, like, yeah, find them and shoot them. But, you know, you can literally, like, use pieces of the environment to get it so that they will either die without anybody suspecting something or, you know, like I said, just get them killed off screen. But yeah, it's that was some good. That was a great game. I'm very, very happy I finally was able to play it and finish it. So other than that, I've also been playing Indivisible for real this time. I've actually gotten a bit further in it. And honestly, that game is pretty good, even though I think the platforming elements are very not as precise as they kind of need to be, especially considering how precarious parts of it can be. But otherwise, it's pretty good. And I've also been playing Control Ultimate Edition because I wanted to play the DLC for that game. And I decided, you know what, screw it. I'll just start over from the beginning because it's a great game and it's worth it. So that's what I've been playing. So Dan Reb, I know what you've been playing. So, you know, go ahead.
Obviously, I've been playing Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
I was able to receive the game a little bit early on Thursday. Problem was, I was at work. So it was funny. So I was at work, and then I decided I'm going to go to GameStop and see if they have any of those. They give out a wooden plaque to people that pre-ordered the game. But the thing was, I pre-ordered the game online, and they mentioned that if you wanted to get it, you can get it at the store. But then I saw that Wario64 and CheapAss Gamer were tweeting that some stores were only giving out to people who did in-store pre-order. But yeah, so I went, and I'll tell you what, there was a line out the door going all the way to PetSmart, and that was pretty far out. You know, obviously, midnight releases aren't much of a thing anymore. But I don't know, it was just really cool seeing that. Like, you know, obviously, you know, the world is what it is with safety protocols, but it was really cool seeing that, and it really, like, brought me back. That being said, you know, I went over there, I told them my case, and then they ended up giving me a wooden plaque, so that was pretty cool. Then I went home, and then I saw that my mailbox was stuffed the hell out of. There were three boxes in my mailbox, and I have no idea how the mail. So there were, like I said, there were three boxes. One had an amiibo, the other had an amiibo, and then the other had the game. I was like, all right, cool. I got the game early, and we'll go ahead and start it. But you guys also know that I also got the OLED, the new Zelda OLED Switch, so I spent some time installing that too. And I think Nintendo actually did a better job streamlining the process of transferring your stuff from Switch to Switch. I don't remember it being this easy, and I've done this like 4 times, and I was not looking forward to it. That's why I held it up this long. Moving on to the game, I started playing it around maybe 10, 11 p.m., so obviously it was already pretty late. Logged onto my Switch, saw that 15 people were already playing it. Like, even people who I thought were, like, super casual gamers who only played Animal Crossing were playing Tears of the Kingdom. So that just goes to show how much reach The Legend of Zelda still has. So, you know, I don't expect Tears of the Kingdom to outsell Breath of the Wild, but it's pretty clear that we're at an event in a moment of time for this. Like, everyone's playing it. It's really cool seeing everyone do what they do. Of course, you know, I empathize with Brandon, who has to wait until tomorrow, but I'll tell you what, you'll definitely enjoy what you start.
I know.
The game began pretty much what you'd expect. If you remember the way the last game ended, again, I don't want to delve into spoilers for the last game, but basically, you're exploring these caverns with Princess Zelda. All of a sudden, stuff happens. Shit hits the fan. And all of a sudden, you wake up in the sky. And that's where the new tutorial process begins. So in this tutorial process, you have to complete three shrines. And then you have these new abilities that you can use, a lot like Breath of the Wild was. And but to put it out there, you no longer have the Sheikah Slate. You end up getting something else. So all of those abilities you had, like the bombs, the cryonis, the freezing thing, you don't have those anymore. They've been replaced by other things. So now you have the option to move things around. You have the ascend ability, which allows you to pretty much just go through ceilings and end up on top of something, which you can't do everywhere, but it's pretty cool seeing how hacky it is. And then you have the merge function, or the which allows you to take an item you have and merge it with your shield or your sword, in order to just do a whole lot of stuff. And this tutorial process took maybe around 4 hours, and a lot of it, like Breath of the Wild, is really just exploring. You have like no map in front of you. All you really know is like north, south, east, and west, and like you can go ahead and set up your own waypoints. But as for like you really have no sense of where you're going. And but you know, when you actually explore, you can see things off in the distance, whether it's something shiny, like in the previous game where you saw shrines, it's the same thing here. Instead of seeing those oranges, though, you see more of a floating haze that you can go ahead and walk up to. And then the shrines are just about as what they were in Breath of the Wild. Like they're short and sweet, and sometimes they can be a little long, but maybe nothing longer than 30 minutes unless you really have no idea what you're doing, which can happen. And really enjoying that part so far. And then eventually, once you're out of the tutorial stage, you jump from the sky and into Hyrule, where the game really opens up. If you have a Breath of the Wild save on your game, you actually have access to all the horses you may have registered in Breath of the Wild, so that is a welcome change. I wouldn't call that a spoiler, because it shouldn't affect, like, you know the story, but you know, if you wanted to know that, I apologize. Well, once you get into Hyrule, the world opens up, and I'll tell you what, like, getting from point A to point B in Breath of the Wild was pretty easy. All you had to do was go there. You can do the same thing in Tears of the Kingdom, but it really requires you to be creative with everything you have. So the tutorial stages really showed you the ways that you want to be able to take your items and glue them together and do something else. And you'll be really surprised by the functionality that you can do sometimes. Right now, I'm not all that great with it yet, just because I find the controls kind of finicky. But everybody I've talked to who've had the game since way before I did said that it eventually becomes second nature, like once you reach like 10, 20 hours at that point. And while it seems like a lot, you can easily spend 10, 20 hours doing whatever in this game. And it's funny because even though you think you're doing nothing productive, everything you do will help, because it'll allow you to pick up the controls better. It'll allow you to understand the environments better. It'll allow you to just really understand the way the game works. One of the biggest issues I had early on, and I don't know how far Chris has gotten, but when I finished the shrine in the snow, I pretty much got there in a hacky method. I just like climbed there wherever I saw no ice, because as you'd expect, if you try to climb ice, you'll slip. So I just looked around and looked for the safest place to climb in order to get to it. And you know, in this Breath of the Wild open style, there's multiple ways to get to every area. So anyway, when I finished the shrine, again, I was in a really cold area, and I did not have any equipment that prepares me for the cold, and I was running out of food. So I spent like maybe an hour trying to think of ways to escape that situation I was in, because I just had no idea what to do. And like for some reason, the game saves at various points that you can't really tell which. So whenever I died, I ended up somewhere new, and it didn't really help my progress. Eventually, like, you know, I just grinded my way through and just found my way to the sun and ate whatever items that I had in order to keep Link alive. And I got through that way. And then eventually someone told me that there was a tree stump that I could have ascended to had I saw it. And near that tree stump was an item that would actually give me cold resistance. So I was like, oh, well, shit. Eventually, I went back and got it, because I just finished this dungeon that required me to have cold gear. So there's that. But yeah, again, like, this game really encourages you to tackle things a different way. You can't just really expect to see something and climb it anymore. Now you have obstacles that'll prevent the climb, and seeing how those works. But at the same time, it doesn't really make the game any worse. It does make it a little bit hard, though, because you do have to think on your feet. So if you're used to one way of thinking, you have to actually throw it out the window. So, like, I would say that if you're somebody who hasn't played Breath of the Wild and played this, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that you play the old one. Obviously, like, you know, it sets the foundation and groundwork for what this game definitely is. But if you went into this game blind, I don't think you'd lose all that much either. And one thing I've discovered is that the storytelling and pacing in Tears of the Kingdom, in my opinion, is better than what I had. Anyway, like, I have more to say, but I'll just go ahead and jump off Chris's topics as he goes over them. So what do you think so far, Chris?
It's definitely very story heavy early on, especially because, like, the very beginning, you don't just wake up in a cave and be like, go figure stuff out. You're going around with Zelda under Hyrule Castle, you know, trying to figure out, like, what they call the gloom, that there might be a source of it under the castle. And it kind of leads into what you see from the the original teaser for it, of the weird mummy, I assume that's Ganon, that's hanging out somewhere in the dark, that, you know, very much fucks up your shit in a way that you're starting with like 30 hearts when you're doing this, mm-hmm. all the way down to 3. And Link's arm gets caught in this crossfire as well. So which it gets kind of swapped out for another arm that then allows you to have these abilities and kind of gets rid of the whole rune system from Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
Doing some of the same stuff. The Ultra Hand is kind of similar to the magnetic rune of picking up stuff, that kind of thing. Though you can, you know, attach things to others, which generally works pretty well, though there have definitely been points where I was like, I thought this was going to work one way, but it goes, you know, a slightly different way. They're really set on things attaching specific ways, usually. And it can be pretty easy to off, you know, mess it up at times, where I've, you know, tried to lay blocks, you know, side to side and get it sort of slightly off. So that it puts one on the top or on the corner kind of thing, which for most cases you're using that stuff, it's not that big of a deal. Mm. But yeah, I got to a shrine that was... The thing I like about the shrines this time around is they're not like mini puzzle situations. They're all kind of tutorials for different parts of the game, the mechanics and that kind of stuff. They're all about teaching you that stuff, though. Whether you're going to encounter any of the things, you know, it talks about or it's covering is the other question. Because, like, I ran into a shrine that was dealing with these like containers you can fill up with fuel that I have not seen since then, that kind of thing. But I do like the shrines a lot. It's much of a teaching tool. I ran into one just before we started that was basically, hey, we got vehicles. Here's a way to like mess around with them. And it kind of takes all your weapons away, weapons and such away from your inventory and gives you a few things to start with to try and take out all of these constructs that are hanging around doing their thing. And that was pretty fun to try out, which I had, you know, some big metal spike panels that I put on, try to put on the front of this vehicle and, you know, have it, you know, glue on from the very edge, but it kept putting it in the middle so you couldn't actually drive the vehicle. That was a big issue. So I had to like put it on top, sort of the edge on the top there. So it kind of worked out the same way, but not in the way that I thought it would. That kind of thing. But once I got that figured out, and then I had a flame emitter that I attached on there, so it also spewed flames while I was trying to hit that, as well as another thing that I had not used before, but essentially shoots out a big, thin, like, laser. So if you can aim it right, you can sort of just drain health off of enemies. But, you know, for here, I was just basically this death vehicle running into enemies, though if I ran into two of them, it just slowed me down to a crawl as their health sort of slowly chipped away. So that was kind of a little wrinkle, but it has like a few vehicles in there that I could have run around and got into. That was neat to see, though obviously once I killed all the enemies, the first vehicle I had, you know, the rest of it becomes useless. But the building stuff is pretty neat, but yeah, like I thought it would happen pre-launch, that they would just have materials all over the place, like when you potentially need it for something, and they definitely do that here. Where, you know, on that first Sky Island, you'll run into the lake that they showed in that gameplay demonstration, where you put together a thing. The weird thing is there are logs next to the helper constructs that they freak out if you grab them for whatever reason. It was real annoying to see like, oh, there's a couple of these that are sitting here that look like that you could use them, but you couldn't if you, unless you maybe push them out of their range, but there's some weird stuff like that. But yeah, there's a lot of different types of materials. You know, you can chop down trees if you need more logs, that kind of thing, instead of the way that stuff worked in Breath of the Wild, where you could sort of, we only needed to do that if you needed wood, you know, piles for that stuff. But here that's more, you can just use logs for that stuff. But also there's just sections of materials all over the place because Hudson Construction has been hired by, you know, the Hyrule Castle to help rebuild a bunch of stuff. So they just have these everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's even some side missions tied to that stuff where there's a dude literally holding a sign for Hudson Construction that is hanging around everywhere. And I tried to attach a log to it and it didn't work. So I was like, oh, maybe this isn't a side quest. But I figured out a way to do it at another place. I was like, okay, I get what they're going for here, but it's kind of clunky in the way some of that stuff works.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just goes against the grain of what you've been doing the last several hours. Of just, you just kind of let the physics handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Versus actually like securing things.
Yeah, I mean, you're actually going to walk through a bunch of areas where they have beds for hunting construction materials. And, you know, they include everything from like wood panels to 2x4s to wheels. The thing is, like, all of these things aren't going to work the way you want them to unless you bring in some of the Zonai items from the sky. So one thing, like, I forgot to mention about the Sky Islands being sort of a tutorial is that the reason why it's a tutorial on a tutorial is the fact that, you know, the Sky people have a different kind of technology. They're the ones that have all the batteries and stuff like that and special things of those areas. So a lot of the loot that you get from killing the Sky enemies can be used to exchange for a whole bunch of capsules that you can eventually have in your inventory, bring into high. Some of those include the fire emitter that Chris mentioned. You can also bring in a high-powered fan that you can use to, you know, make your boat accelerate faster, among other things. There's also the glider that you can use to just, you know, fly through the sky a whole lot faster and actually fly, like not just really just hack your parasail, which I forgot to mention. The parasail comes after you get to Hyrule. So that was one of the reasons why I was struggling so much trying to get from the top to the bottom, is because, you know, Link has a very unforgiving height in which you can like die after 3 hearts. So like I was dying all the time just trying to jump and realizing I have no parasail. Then eventually once I have that, like I said, it really opened up the level of exploration that I was able to do there. On my way to one of the areas for the story, I had to like climb up and reach my way to the certain clouds, and like I was sort of doing a platforming segment, and then I fell from the sky all the way down to Hyrule. But then where I fell actually ended up being where an undiscovered shrine was. So I was like, okay, do I just warp back to where I was before, or should I finish the shrine? So I went ahead and went to the shrine, and then this shrine was one of those shrines where you have to just fight everything and kill everything in order to move forward. And in this one, you have all of your gear is taken away. So it's kind of like Eventide Island from Breath of the Wild, where you have to just survive. And it's the same way here. At the entrance, they have a whole bunch of basic weapons, and it's up to you to kill the 4 or 5 ancient monsters that are there. And, you know, just really be resourceful at your own leisure. Of course, you know, if you decide not to do it, oh well. But, like, the way I did it was, so when I entered, you know, we have one monster at the front, another at the side, and then they're pretty much guarding this interior part where there were two other enemies holding even more dangerous weapons. In order to infiltrate it, you actually have to either ascend to the top and then jump to the bottom that way, or I can go ahead and clear out the first two enemies and then jump over these spikes, or I can what I did was, which I'm assuming the game did not really want me to do, was I took one of those spikes, merged it into one of my weapons to make it more powerful, and then as every enemy came to get me, I let one out, and then I made sure I closed the entrance so I can fight one at a time versus, you know, fighting all four and dying. Because the combat, as far as Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom goes, has always been a little bit hard for me. I struggle to do the flurry rush and the time dodges. But yeah, like it's stuff like that that you can go ahead and cheese, and like Nintendo isn't gonna, like, you know, stop you from doing it. So you still have that level of freedom there. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't think you were able to use the parachute in Breath of the Wild in a shrine. I may be wrong, but I don't remember being able to do that. In Tears of the Kingdom, that is an option. So it definitely adds some flexibility to what you're doing. And then, as I mentioned, with like stuff that you can bring from the sky over to Hyrule, like, you know, the flame emitters and the fans and the rockets and the balloons. Like, if you bring those into a shrine and you're allowed to, you know, it allows you to skip all sorts of puzzles, which is pretty awesome in its own right. Like, I've seen a lot of people on YouTube turn their shields into skateboards by merging wheels or wheeled panels onto their shields, and then just shield surfing, and then just going through rails and grinding that way. Like, you know, it's really cool seeing people just solve puzzles, or quote unquote solve puzzles, by turning the game into Jet Set Radio Future. But as far as the plot goes, I finished like the first major moment or dungeon, so that was pretty cool to do. And right now I'm just traversing and just exploring what I can do. I'm taking my time. I think I've played like maybe at least 6 hours per day at this point, so I'm definitely at least 20 hours in.
Okay.
Awesome.
So yeah, when Danner was talking about bringing those Zonai devices down, he's talking about gacha machines that they have in this game.
Mm-hmm.
They have these machines where you put in up to 5 of the parts that drop from the construct machines into it, and it drops out, you know, randomly chosen pieces in these little capsules that then go into a section of your menus for that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've been doing, but I'm also not pulling them out because they're a limited resource. So I'm like, I'll save this for a rainy day. Just like I have bombs for bomb arrows that, you know, I could use this to make it easy, but you know what? I might really need them later, kind of thing.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that. Like, the game does feel like a survival game up to this point. Not so much with the Zonai items, just because I know that I can go back into the sky and, you know, just farm them using the gacha machines that way. But, like, so far, in that last dungeon I played, the boss required me to use arrows the entire time, and I only had 15 arrows, which means that I had to, like, really be accurate with my shots. And semi-spoilery, but you can only fight this boss flying, so like you got to be careful with what you're doing.
So did you just avoid all the arrows that are in this game? They're all over the place. I have probably 150, and
I just had trouble finding them. And like that's another point. Like, I don't know whether it was the way I played the game when I started, but I've come across a lot of shrines that taught me how to do mechanics that I already figured out for myself. And I noticed that a lot of them were near the first town in Hyrule that you're supposed to go to. So I guess I was just sort of beelining without really even trying. Another thing was that, you mentioned the bomb. Bombs aren't what they used to be. Like, for example, you had a bomb as one of your powers in Breath of the Wild. Whereas now bombs have to be an add-on to your items. You can't just pick up a bomb and drop it and have that be it. You actually have to, you know, attach it to an arrow or drop it somewhere and throw your item at it, which is kind of annoying to me. And
I kind of wish you could just craft a bunch of different types.
Yeah, and as far as I know, there's no crafting in this game.
And it's annoying that you can't be like, hey, I want to use bomb arrows, so just merge them together as I'm needing to use them instead of doing it with each shot.
Yeah, you have to do it every single time, which is kind of annoying, especially since, like, you know, you're slowing down time, but at the same time, like, time is still moving to an extent. So if you're too slow, which happens to me a lot, like, that's bound to happen. Like, it sort of feels like the Monster Hunter weapon wheel, where you're holding on to, like, so many shoulders and buttons and moving around so many sticks. It's very easy to get lost with the controls with what you're doing. And
yeah, especially when they have one of the controls is holding up on the D-pad for items that I don't know how you use that for anything, because you can't, like, because I got the splash fruit, which lets you create like a water, little burst of water in this in the zona the Zora area, because they have sludge all over the place. You can't just like hold one and throw it like a grenade. You have to specifically attach it to an arrow, as far as I can tell. They make it seem like you could just throw it to have it, you know, blow up, but it doesn't seem like it works that way.
When I was making my way to the Rito dungeon, what happened was, like I said, I ran out of bombs. And there were these trampolines that you could use to get up higher and higher to get to where you're supposed to be. And some of those trampolines were being blocked by bombable rocks. And then I noticed that I had no rocks in my inventory. So instead of just warping back and, like, you know, trying to find some, I ended up just using some of the rockets that I got from, like, the Zonai areas in the Sky Islands. And those actually worked. So, yeah, it's just a matter of, like, even though you want to be careful with your resources, like, it's really a matter of being crafty. So, like, one, I ran out of arrows. And then two, it is really hard to come across rupees in this game. Like,
yeah, I don't think they're in any, like, breakable vases or boxes or anything.
Or cutting grass. Like, you actually, like, have to sell, like, rubies that you come across and things like that. And like I said, like, there are areas in the game where you have to be warmed up or you have to be cold. And, like, if you don't have the right gear, like, you will die or eat all your food. And that's not the best way to go. So I used to just be able to just, you know, eat as much as possible and explore as much as possible in Breath of the Wild. But it's not so forgiving in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, I would say that's about the same, but it's not as easy to get clothing. So I feel like you did your thing in one of the areas, you know, like the Rito area or the Zora area or the Goron area or the Gerudo area. You would get opportunities to get outfits that would deal with the climates of those areas. Here, that's much less of a thing, or not right away, at least.
I haven't explored enough to the point where I can earn them, but as far as buying them, they're like 500 rupees. And I'm like, you know, compared to a game like Ocarina of Time, where you can earn the Goron tunic just by, like, doing whatever for the Gorons. Here, I don't know if you can do that, but it isn't as obvious. So one thing that I did, and call it cheating, if you will, I used my Revali Amiibo. And using my Revali Amiibo got me some items, including a Rito helmet that keeps me warm. So I was able to use that and the greaves I got from the Sky Islands in the beginning of the game to survive. But I'm pretty sure the game wanted me to use the Rito clothes, which I couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, the Amiibo is another whole thing, because if you're, like I was talking about the capsule machines, essentially, in this game, the Amiibo are also another RNG source, because they talk about, you know, you can get these specific, you know, skins for your glider or, you know, outfit stuff. You have a chance of getting that. So there's, you know, like, common items you can get out of it, uncommon, and then, like, the top tier thing, and you can only use them once a day. So you may, you know, try it and be like, oh, I didn't get the thing. I'll have to try again tomorrow just to get the things that they advertised. And I think it was a similar mechanic with Breath of the Wild, where it's also sort of random what you might get. But I feel like they had less, like, interesting or important items in there.
Yeah, I remember in Breath of the Wild, they actually had, like, a semi-exclusive function for each amiibo, even including the ones that weren't part of the Zelda line. Like, I remember if you scan Toad, for example, you got, like, almost every mushroom. So that was pretty interesting to see. But I've only played around with the Champions amiibo in Tears of the Kingdom. I haven't played around with the rest yet, only because I never knew what the limit was. So I didn't actually know it was once a day. I thought it was, like, only once per amiibo, so... again, I'd rather do it when I really need it. And during that time, I really needed it.
Yeah, when I tried it out, I was just on one of the parts of the Sky Island, and I looked up one of the guides that people have, and they'll show, like, here's what all the things you could potentially get out of this one amiibo. And I just had Toon Link, a Zelda, Smash amiibos, and then I think the Twilight Princess Midna and Wolf Link amiibo. None of those get you anything interesting. It's just you can drop materials or fish or meat kind of thing, which at least at that point was a good thing to have. But yeah, that stuff, I hope there's another way to unlock that stuff. I assume there probably is. But yeah, this way, I'm not going to spend a bunch of money on amiibo just to get, you know, fancy outfits, stuff like that. So, but yeah, the what I am doing right now, so once you get out of the initial stuff on Hyrule, they basically, Pura basically tells you, like, yeah, there's, you know, you need to go back to each of the four main other kingdoms in this, in Hyrule. So the Gerudos, the Ritos, the Zoras, and the Gorons, and sort of figure out what's going on. Because, you know, initially when you show up, they're like, oh, Link and Zelda are gone. We don't know what happened, so we need to figure out. And then you show up, they're like, oh, what's, okay, you're okay. Is Zelda okay? And you're like, no, she disappeared. We don't know. I think I saw her flying at one point. I don't know what the hell's going on. You know, and so that's, they send you off on these things, as well as you deal with what the towers look like now, which instead of being sort of like an Ubisoft style tower of climbing, you know, all that stuff, they are just these towers that literally just shoot you into the air like a giant cannon, at which you use the Pura pad to like scan the ground beneath you, that fills in the map for that area, and the sky portion of the map. So the map has two layers now, the ground and the sky, so it can fill in that stuff as much as you need. But then there, it's just like, you gotta go fly, or you know, zoom down to the ground, kind of thing. At that point, which this whole process is a lengthy cutscene that is the same every time. Of you getting shot into the air with this cord attached to you, because as you scan this, it sort of gets zapped down to the tower for some reason, and then you're set free to go glide around and do whatever. But initially, that stuff's not exactly like the amazing helpful thing that it is, because you have only one ring of stamina at that point. And I feel like the stamina at one ring runs out faster than it did in the original Breath of the Wild, though I'm not going to start over to double check that. Because it just feels like that runs out so much faster now, especially when you're gliding. Swimming, you have a little bit more opportunity to not drown, though they kind of mislead you with that initially, because a lot of the water you run into on the Sky Island has a bunch of lily pads that you kind of climb up on and regain your stamina. But once you get down, it's like, nope, that shit's not anywhere around here, at least the places I've been. So I've gone up to Goron City, which I talked to somebody that was wandering around. I was like, oh yeah, things are great in Goron City. Our economy is amazing and all this. I was like, okay, maybe I'll go there, because it seemed to be the closest I could get to. And when I got there, there's definitely a big problem. I'm guessing there's a problem at every single one of these areas. Because in Goron City, they're like, everybody's high, man. They're eating these meat rocks that are just getting everybody high, and nobody wants to work anymore. That kind of thing. And then there are people taking advantage of the fact that nobody's working and raising all the rates for everything and just trying to screw people out of money. So they're very much telling you up front, like, yo, don't buy anything here, at least not till you solve the problem here. Which is like, okay, that's not great when I'm trying to, you know, buy some actual outfit gear to be able to handle, you know, these different areas for that. But then I went to the Zora's domain, which you meet your buddy Sidon, who I feel like it's kind of hilarious that he considers Link his dearest friend, whereas Link is like, I'm friends with everybody. I don't know your best friend, the kind of way that the relationship seems to be. Where they're very much like, oh yeah, you're Sidon's best friend. He talks about you all the time, and you're like, I don't think about him most of the time. Like, what the hell's this guy needs to really know what's going on here, what sort of person he's considering his best friend. And that whole area is getting fucked up by this sludge that seems to be dripping out of the sky, to which people are like, I don't know if this sludge is coming from the sky. Like, this seems like a huge problem. And I'm like looking up at the huge column of sludge coming up from the sky. I'm like, I'm pretty sure there's shit going on up there that you guys need to deal with. So they have their own problem there. So that's pretty fun to deal with. And that stuff is pretty easily solved with the splash fruit that lets you, you know, get rid of a bunch of it, though they, I suppose there's probably a decent amount of stuff that's hidden under that, but I'm usually only going for the things that I can see. But then I went to one of the shrines that was near this area, that was off a bit to the distance on top of this building. That was kind of in its own area. I forget what the area might have been called. I did the shrine. I came out and immediately ran into two enemies that I was like, nope, we're out of here. There's one that was like this sludge with hands coming out of it that did not have problems seeing you if you ran into its vision. That was a whole thing. And then I was flying away on the glider and then ran into this three-headed dragon. I was like, oh, this is even more fucked up, because as you got close to it, it got a name popped up and a big life bar. I was like, oh, nope. And it changed the weather to like a thunderstorm. That I was like, yep, we're out of here, because this is all fucked up. I think one of the biggest problems I've had so far, I've been dying a bunch, mostly because I've been playing a bunch of Breath of the Wild recently with, you know, like 13 hearts. And you start here with 4 hearts when you start really doing most of your combat, to which, you know, your opportunity to survive that is much greatly reduced with that. A lot of the enemies early on can really fuck you up pretty quick in like 2 hits, if it even takes that for some of them. So I'm being very exploratory around all the nooks and crannies and running into enemies that I'm pretty sure are going to fuck me up in a way that I don't want to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with Breath of the Wild, I always like avoided the taluses, and I've never actually killed a Lynel. So as far as like, you know, all those optional bosses, I tend to just stay away from those because I just really wanted to explore the map. And, you know, like I said earlier, with the original Breath of the Wild, I was so exploratory that I actually finished the map in around 2 days just looking for all the towers. I tried doing the same thing in Tears of the Kingdom, but it turns out like not all of them are on. I worked really hard to access this one tower, and apparently I couldn't get in because I had to go around the caves to figure out what was wrong with it. I had no idea like which cave it would be, because, you know, I had no way to look at it in the map, and it was kind of annoying in that regard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Tears of the Kingdom is pretty awesome. We've spent a lot of time with it. A lot of the things Chris mentioned are things that I haven't even touched yet, because I've never seen a Zoro or a Goron in the game yet. I've only messed with Doritos.
So, yeah. Out of curiosity, have any of you run into the Zonai yet? Or at least think them?
You meet one right away.
Isn't it a Raru, or whatever his name is? Big, yeah. Tall, goat-looking dude?
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of had a little bit of his backstory spoiled for me.
Gotcha. No, like I was going to say, Brandon, like even though like obviously you're excited and you're getting the game tomorrow, like were there any questions that you had that weren't?
No, y'all pretty much answered all of them. You said that shrines are still a thing. Have you actually gone into anything that resembles like an actual dungeon yet, or are those still off the table? So you have come across like a dungeon or a temple or something like that.
Yes. I don't know how many there are in the game. It's probably, if I were to guess, it would be between 4 and 8. But like from what we're playing and with the context clues, there's more of what I just did. And just to say it straight up, it's called a temple. So
yeah,
that's usually a dungeon in Zelda terms. But I will say a lot of them, or that would be my assumption, it still kind of felt like a divine beast in a way. Because this dungeon did not have a specific item, like, you know, that's central to solving it. It was one of those things where, all right, you have to solve the 5 puzzles to unlock the final door to fight the boss. And the boss that I fought was awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah, I have not seen any dungeons yet. But yeah, I know they are in there because they had some developer interview thing on Nintendo that Nintendo did, and they kept tweeting about it last week. So I was like, oh, I know there's dungeons in there. That's about as much as I know. But yeah, there's still Koroks. There's the new thing for Koroks is the buddy that has a backpack that's way too huge, and he's crying about how he can't get to his buddy that's, you know, off in the distance. I've done at least 3 or 4 of those.
Yeah,
I tried to ford one across a river, which ended up with it not going the way I wanted, and then he fell off the raft and went down the river, and I was like, well, I'll see him later.
All
right. So I assume he'll just respawn.
All right.
I probably had about 10 to 12 of those just on the Sky Island at the beginning, but I haven't run into Hestu. I have no clue where he is at, so I might just look that up. Because I would like to get some more inventory space. So they start you with a lot of space for at least weapons. You get probably about 9 you can hold initially. And the fusing stuff is pretty neat on that, especially the way they change up the names. Where I merged a thick stick and a long stick. They could just call it thick stick, long stick. And I've had like soldier sword, broadsword. You know. Sometimes it'll just merge them in ways that are like weird, you know, but, and I put, you know, I put a glider on, not the glider that Link uses. There's these like, gliders that you ride on almost, and you kind of move around on them to change its direction, whatnot, the way it glides. I put that on a weapon, which is weird. You can put rocks and shields and bucks, what was it, like box sticks that you put, you know, a box onto a stick pretty easy, like big vehicle, you know, big a big power kind of weapon early on, a lot of that kind of stuff. The building stuff, I think, is very, you can see the shortcuts they take where they disable them pretty quickly. After you leave the area, if you die, they undo any of that stuff you've done. That kind of stuff is pretty easy to mess up and lose your progress on that stuff. So that's another reason why I haven't really built anything major. Though there's that meme going around on Twitter of somebody building essentially like a wooden dude with a dick on it that shoots fire out of it, which Nintendo posted for a Mother's Day thing. It's like, oh, what'd you build for your mother? And in you know, Tears of the Kingdom, and somebody replied with a picture of that. I'm like, you really walked right into that social media person. You should know that thing existed because it has at least 100,000 likes on it. So that's a whole fun thing. And yeah, the shrines. I had somebody really point this out in a way that I can't unsee it, but the shrines are Goatsy designed. You'll see what I mean when you open up your, or you find your first one, Brandon. But they basically have this like kind of dragon-ish design that wraps around the big rock that almost looks like fingers holding the edges as the portal into the shrine, into the shrine opens up right between it, the edges. So it's very much a modern Goatsy. So I've been seeing people call them Goatsy shrines. So I'm like, all right. And then calling the, what is it? The ascend ability is the getting stuck in a, you know, in a couch porn ability. That whole meme of porn, kind of thing. So yeah, there's lots of fun things where it's like, did the Zelda team at all construct anybody that's a sicko on any of these designs? Because it doesn't seem like it for some of the ways. Somebody's already done a video of them doing the ascend up the butthole of a statue. So that's a whole thing. There's a lot of people having fun with that.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, I'll try and find it here. But yeah, the game's good. It's very complex. I feel like if you do not like the improvisational nature of Breath of the Wild, this probably won't change that too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to act like it's certain for everybody. But yeah, it's a whole thing that, you know, they ask a lot of you at times. But yeah, I wonder how much people that sort of hate the durability stuff are going to take to this, because I don't think it's really changed all that much. You can put a new item on, you can like fuse items together in a way that extends that a bit, but I still haven't figured out. I've had items break off of a fused weapon, so I could just fuse something else, but I don't know how that works versus I've had fused weapons that broke entirely once that happened. So I don't know if they both parts have durability separate from each other, that if one goes out before the other, that's, you know, that kind of affects the whole thing. There's a lot of questions around that stuff. But yeah, what I've been doing mostly is trying to get all the towers and activate shrines and do those when I can, because that I can get more hearts and stamina out of that stuff. So that's kind of a lot of what I've been doing with this game for that stuff. So I think the other thing I have an issue with this game is there's basically no accessibility options in this game. It's not a really huge surprise. Nintendo does not really do any of that kind of stuff, and I think control-wise there should be some more options than there are. They do have one that they swap the jump and the sprint button from Breath of the Wild, which was X and B. They swapped them by default, and then they have an option for swapping them back, which still those are buttons where I would say they are poorly placed either way. Because you oftentimes want to run and jump, but, you know, those are opposite sides of your face buttons. That makes you do weird things to do that versus, like, making that the left stick. Your L3 press, like a lot of games do, as your sprint. They could have a lot more here. The inventory stuff is improved because you don't have to sit here and hold or push the right stick, you know, left and right to navigate through it so much. I don't know if there's limitations on that stuff or how much you can hold of, you know, meals and whatnot, because that was an issue in Breath of the Wild. They also put the quest next to in the map section now, instead of being next to your inventory. That makes a lot more sense now, because then you can like read what the quest wants you, where they want you to go, and you can be like, okay, let me look at the map and see where I need to go. You know, that kind of thing, much more easily. They make it a lot easier to drop items when you open up a chest with a weapon or a shield or a bow in it and you're already full. Mm-hmm. It'll immediately pop up your list of inventory to be like, do you want to drop anything here to get this thing? So that's a much improved thing here. There's a couple of things like that is nice, but yeah, the accessibility stuff is sort of the definitely the big issue here, because I think I hate going into shrines because there's a long cutscene to start and two long cutscenes to end it that I have to skip through, and I would love an option just to skip them all because it's the exact same cutscene each time. It's similar to what happened in shrines in Breath of the Wild, where you'd have to watch this long thing and be like, here's your orb. And then goes another cutscene as it ends kind of thing. So yeah, there's a lot of nitpicking issues that I think do add up to some annoyances. There's definitely some of that with the controls and all that. Maybe it'll get better with time, but I think there are some elements of it that maybe won't. But we'll see how it goes. Definitely looking forward to put some more time into this and at least get more ability to get around the map. Because I do enjoy doing that, but I feel like I haven't had too much in the way of obstacles, but that's the whole thing there. So yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about Tears of the Kingdom.
Okay.
But yeah, let's get to the rest of our news here.
Mm-hmm.
It's May, and the PS Plus game catalog has been announced, the lineup for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a shitload of games for you this month.
Yep.
To get starting on Tuesday 16th.
Mm-hmm.
The big highlight here is Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart for the PS5.
Absolutely. That game is amazing.
Yeah, definitely worth playing if you like your 3D platformers. It's a pretty reasonable platinum mm-hmm. to get for that. So definitely worth checking out. For the new release here, Humanity,
mm-hmm.
for PS5, PS4, as well as PSVR and PSVR2.
Mm-hmm.
That is the new game from Enhance that's been in development for several years now.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks really neat and weird, so mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to checking that one out.
Mm-hmm.
For PS5 and PS4, Watch Dogs Legion.
Mm-hmm.
I've survived all the sales for that game that were under $20. I was like, oh, I should just get this. I know it's not that great, but for under $20, it's probably not too bad. But now I don't have to even put that down for it to check it out for that game. So, yep, there's a Watch Dogs Legion, the newest Ubisoft game on there.
Mm-hmm.
For PS4, there's Dishonored 2. You can check that one out, as well as Dishonored Death of the Outsider.
Mm-hmm.
Also for the PS4, that's the sort of standalone expansion for Dishonored 2, so more Dishonored for you. And then we started getting to some of the weirder stuff. They added a bunch of the farming, action farming sims. Sukuna of Rice and Ruin for the PS4 is also on here. That one looks neat. They got one launched exclusively on the Switch. For a bit, and then came to the PS4. There's all three Tomb Raiders, Tomb Raider Definitive Edition.
Yep.
Rise of the Tomb Raider 20-year celebration. That mm-hmm. also has PSVR stuff in it. If you have not tried that out yet. And then Shadow of the Tomb Raider, which is where people are like, all right, I've had enough of Tomb Raider.
Yeah. The first two games are actually really pretty good, but that last one is, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, they tried to make a game for everybody mm-hmm. in the Tomb Raider fandom, and I don't think that worked out super well.
Because
mm-hmm. This one supposedly had more of the tombs and all that to raid, but also tried to be, you know, like the stealth stuff that the first game had,
mm-hmm.
the reboot trilogy kind of stuff. So it kind of ended up not really pleasing that many people.
Yeah.
At least they had a ridiculous premise where Laura causes the apocalypse to happen.
Yeah.
So there's that for you. Let's see. For PS5 and PS4, Bus Simulator 21, Next Stop.
Mm.
So that's, yeah, comprehensive upgrade of the original Bus Simulator 21. Mm. Let's see. Career mode combines sandbox mode with the campaign's economic system. So that's neat. I own like a bus driver simulator. That's like a real janky looking thing. This one seems like it's probably the more complete kind of bus driving simulation, so that might be neat to check out. Let's see, back to Bethesda with the Evil Within 2, where the game is all about this white goop that's all over a lot of the stylistic stuff about it.
Yep.
That's where the thing I think that people like more than the original.
Yeah, the second game is actually a bit more open-ended than the first one is. The first one is a very linear experience. The second one is more, I don't want to go so far to say open world, because that's not quite true, but it definitely feels more open than the first one was.
I think you have like a hub area of sorts to get around in.
Yep.
But let's see, Wolfenstein Youngblood. That is a game that did not really go well for that franchise.
No, but then again, like none of these, really none of the sort of spin-offs to the new main series has really done well. Like the, you know, the previous spin-off, I think it was called The Old Blood. It didn't do well either.
Yeah, but this one was sort of takes place, 19 years after the events of Wolfenstein 2.
Yeah.
BJ's daughters are trying to figure out where he disappeared to.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns it into like a weird shooter RPG kind of thing.
A co-op shooter RPG, which...
Yeah. Where you end up having enemies with levels to them that then can require just a ton of shooting to take mm-hmm. them out. A lot of grind and bullet sponge stuff to it that people didn't really like.
Yeah.
But let's see here. For PS5, Thymesia. This is a Souls-like that I've heard pretty good things about for indie Souls-likes.
Hmm.
This one features like a plague doctor named Corvus. Hmm. So it's got some of that kind of stuff to it. Yeah, plague weapons, that kind of stuff. Then for PS4, we got Rain World, which is an indie game that I've heard a lot of cool stuff about. That's where you play as this little weasel dog, whatever that's called. But you're sneaking around these areas trying to kill enemies and elude predators and solve puzzles and all that kind of stuff as you explore around. So that's the whole thing there. For PS5 and PS4, Lake. This is a game I really like a lot. This is a game set in like the late 80s where you're playing a character named Meredith who has returned to this quiet town in Oregon to take over for her dad's mail carrier route to deliver mail and packages and such for people in the town that kind of expands all around this lake. And you're kind of learning more about, people that she hasn't seen in a long time as she moved out to the big city, I think, in Seattle for a tech company. And she's dealing with a lot of stuff going on, meeting up with old friends and potential romantic relationships and all that kind of stuff. That's a neat game. It's like 5 or 6 hours long, maybe. It's really well done. People should have been checked that one out. If you're into it, let's see. For PS4, there's Conan Exiles. That is an online survival game that seems like it could have been neat, but I think it gets real bogged down in a lot of control stuff.
Yeah, it's basically, like you said, it's an open world survival game. And, it was unique when it came out, but those types of games are kind of a dime a dozen now.
Yeah, and a lot of the other games do things a lot better than this one did.
Yeah.
It's really, rooted in its systems and all that. And mm-hmm. I really struggled to even get to a point where I could, survive in the opening area. That I was just like, fuck this. This isn't even worth whatever's going on here. But they sell a lot of DLCs if you want to pay for that. But we're going back to the action farming games. Rune Factory 4 Special for the PS4. Mm-hmm. I played a decent bit of this on Switch. It's a pretty cool game, but I believe it's a DS port. So keep your expectations on the visual level there. But, it's very much in the vein of, Harvest Moon, Stardew Valley, that kind of stuff, where you're going around town, talking to people, giving them gifts to raise your relationship with them and, do all that stuff. And then going out and fighting enemies to get materials for crafting things and doing quests and all that kind of stuff. It's pretty neat. And there's Story of Seasons, Friends of Mineral Town for the PS4, which if you remember that subtitle, that was a Harvest Moon game, but Harvest Moon belongs to a different studio than the people that made those games. So they've kind of turned those into Story of Seasons. And that's kind of continuing the Harvest Moon of old to new games. But then, the Harvest Moon that's around now is trying to do stuff like the Harvest Moon of old, but not many people like those games. So that's a whole weird thing. They got this. They changed this recently. Soundfall they have on here for PS5 and PS4, but I guess only for Japan and Asia regions. And I'm curious why that changed. That's all your extra exclusive stuff. or the stuff for Extra and Premium. A lot of stuff there, a lot of good games there, and a good variety for people to check out. And for the PS Plus Premium tier, the top tier, they have four games here, three PSP games. There's Siphon Filter, Logan's Shadow, the last of the main Siphon Filter games. There's a, I think there's a PS2 exclusive one that they made that I don't think anybody really liked, so they might just forget that one existed for any of this stuff. But this is the second PSP game, so you get the another one to experience, and that'll be it for them filling the service with Siphon Filter games for that. So there you go. I wonder if they'll get to Resistance Retribution, because that's the other Bend PSP game that they made that is a lot of the same stuff that Siphon Filter has, but for Resistance game for that stuff. I wonder if that'll happen at some point, but let's see here. There's Blade Dancer Lineage of Light. That is an RPG. I think it's an action RPG, or no, turn-based RPG. Let's see. You're taking on the role of the boy Lance, who must save the world with the help of his friends. A very unique story. Let's see. What does it say here? Unique fighting system. Rounds do not begin until a monster is struck. That's weird. There's a crafting system in there. Develop skills called Luna Abilities to use powerful new attacks against stronger enemies. So that one has like all right reviews, sixes and sevens. So that's probably pretty decent for that. But yeah, there's that. And the last PSP game here is Pursuit Force. That's a weird little game where it's kind of a jump into the action as a member of the elite Pursuit Force and rid the state of corruption. Yeah, you're sort of driving vehicles, and then at certain points you get to jump out of them onto enemy vehicles to take them over and take out the enemies and all that kind of stuff. It's a very kind of action-packed kind of driving game kind of thing that's pretty neat. A lot of stuff that was in that was cool about that stuff was in stuff like Sleeping Dogs and the Just Cause games, that kind of stuff. So that game has at least some legacy in there. And then the last one is Ghostbusters, the video game remastered. Remastered the PS3 and Xbox 360 Ghostbusters game, which was actually pretty good. Probably the best of the Ghostbuster games that have ever been made, which is not a high bar, but this is one that was kind of made as like, this is kind of what maybe Ghostbusters 3 would be. Where they brought back everybody from the original crew. Outside of, I think, some of the side characters, but they did get a bunch of them back as well. So yeah, that one's pretty cool, especially as like a very spooky game there for people to check out. So that's the PS Plus game catalog. A lot of cool stuff there for people to check out. So definitely worth grabbing that here starting on Tuesday. But next up here, I was not expecting this to ever happen, but A Plague Tale Requiem on the new consoles, PS5 and Xbox Series X and S, got an update that adds a 60 FPS performance mode to the game so that it runs a lot better with this. I played a little bit of it when that came out, but I didn't really notice that it wasn't 60 FPS. It seemed like it just ran a little bit better than what the original was, but I guess that must have been at like a 30 FPS there. But yeah, that's cool. Seems like the PC version is getting enhanced graphics options to further optimize presentational performance. And yeah, they've also gotten bug fixes as well. This includes also the Switch Cloud port. Not for the performance stuff, but for all the bug fixes. So that's neat. Some of the checkouts, but for new releases here coming up here on Monday, Trackmania is finally hitting the consoles, all the PlayStation, Xbox consoles, and PC. I think that is Luna for the PC stuff, or no, just PlayStation, Xbox, and Luna is the other platform technically getting the game here, but this is the the free-to-play Trackmania that has a bunch of content in it, but they also have like yearly subscription fees, essentially. You just give them like $10 for the year for a certain level of extra content for like online play and all that kind of stuff. And I think there's a $30 a year, which for the amount of stuff you get is pretty decent for it. But though a lifetime pass would have been nice, but yeah. But the free ones should be pretty good for everybody. So you can play all the single player content they have, as well as join in some of the multiplayer stuff. I think you just can't set up your own servers or anything for that, but that's cool that they finally got that. Because, yeah, that launched early on in the pandemic in July of 2020 for PC, but since then it's now come to the other platforms as cross-play and cross-progression. So a lot of good stuff there. I look forward to checking that one out. But happening later this week, Street Fighter VI is getting an open beta for PS5, Xbox Series X, and S, and PC from May 19th to the 21st. That'll feature eight characters, Chun-Li, Guile, Jamie, Juri, Ken, Kimberly, Luke, and Ryu, as well as a number of stages, and you'll be able to play a bunch of multiplayer stuff. Yeah, tournaments, training mode, all that kind of stuff. So you can check out a bunch of that game ahead of its launch on the 2nd, I think. Yeah, June 2nd is when the full game launches. So a good way to check that out early. And let's see here. Next up, yeah, there's an indie game coming out pretty soon, June 13th. Dordogne, I think this was announced a couple of years ago. But yeah, this comes from publisher Focus Entertainment, developer Un Je Ne Sais Quoi. So you can tell it's a French game. Coming to everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. Narrative adventure game, which you play as Mimi, a 32-year-old woman visiting the house of her recently deceased grandmother. As a souvenir of the childhood summers Mimi spent with her in Dordogne, her grandmother left her letters and puzzles to solve to remind her to make the most out of life. So it's that kind of narrative adventure game, finding out more about her story and her family and all that, while reliving these memories and all this kind of stuff. Solving these puzzles and whatnot. So that's cool. Sounds neat. Next up here, Guilt is coming to PlayStation, Xbox, and PC on July 6th. This was one of these Stadia exclusive games from Tequila Works. This is sort of a, let's see. It's an eerie story mixing fantasy and reality in a surrealist place where your nightmares become reality. It's got some puzzles, stealth, action stuff. Set in a fictional old mining town in the state of Maine. So very much going for probably a little bit of Stephen King. Maybe meet Stranger Things vibe a little bit there. So that looks neat. That'll finally be coming to console, so it's not cloud exclusive.
Yeah.
And then we got the first of our delays here. Goodbye Volcano High has been delayed to August 29th. Unfortunately, that was supposed to come out June 15th, but they're giving it about another 2.5 months there of development. Saying, that the reality is that with our current workload, we would not have met our June launch date without significant cuts to the quality and scope of the game. This would mean delivering something much different than what we've envisioned and worked towards. We don't want to release anything less than the best version of the game we have been making throughout our development cycle. As well as they say they're a studio that prides itself on avoiding crunch. So they definitely wanted to avoid that as well. So, they're moving out of the very busy June timeframe to August. That'll be a little bit better for them. Hopefully we'll see how that goes. That's a little disappointing, but hopefully makes for a much better game there. So you have to wait till August for that one. And the other big delay decimated large parts of the internet that have been complaining about no news on this game. Hollow Knight Silk Song has been delayed out of the time frame that they had given in the first half of 2023. No time frame has been given still. So it'll be sometime after the first half of 2023. So they'll still get the complaint of every director, Xbox showcase or whatever that doesn't mention any news on this game.
Mm-hmm.
But as they announced here, hey gang, just a quick update about Silksong. We had planned to release in the first half of 2023, but development is still continuing. We're excited by how the game is shaping up and it's gotten quite big. So we want to take our time to make the game as good as we can. Expect more details from us once we get closer to release. So yeah, much like Goodbye Volcano High, just take your time, do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody needs that game right now in whatever state it would be in currently.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's that. Next up here, Nintendo Live 2023, an event that was kind of shrouded in some mystery of when it was going to happen and what it was going to be like. But now we have more details. It's happening September 1st to the 4th with nobody being able to just get into it.
Mm.
You can either register for an opportunity to be randomly selected to receive free tickets through the official website. The other opportunity you can get for tickets to that is if you're going to PAX, because it is taking place in the same building as PAX West is. In the Seattle Convention Center. If you get tickets there, you will have a chance to potentially also get an entry into Nintendo Live 2023. So you're not even guaranteed there, and that creates a whole weird problem where you might go to PAX West with friends and not be able to go to this thing with them as well. But yeah, they do mention for the Nintendo Live websites, you register for an opportunity to be randomly selected, receive free tickets. Eligible Nintendo account holders who are at least 18 years of age can register for the drawing for groups of two or more. Each attendee with their own Nintendo account must be linked to the same free Nintendo account family group. This ensures that all parties in the same group can attend together and on the same day. So it's like the one account family group can go if they're picked. But individuals can't necessarily guarantee that they'll be able to go with other people. So it's kind of a whole weird setup. But the event itself seems like it's going to just have some tournament play stuff for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and Splatoon 3. Let's see. And a bunch of games, live stage performances, yeah, tournaments, photo opportunities, event merchandise, and more. And they're kind of hedging their words and saying, like, oh, don't expect anything big to be announced here, which won't stop people from expecting big announcements.
Oh, yeah.
But like, oh, you can't be holding this event if you don't have, you know, announce a new game. It's like, that's not going to stop them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is a weird little event.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly for, you know, people want to hang out and play some Nintendo games, I guess.
Mm.
Whether they need to or not, I don't know. But yeah, there you go. Nintendo Live.
Yep.
But next up here is some pretty cool news. PlayStation has announced their India Hero Project incubator program. This is similar to what they did in China with the China Hero Project, which funded and incubated a lot of developers to make games that could get onto the PlayStation. Through this program, I think Genshin Impact was one of those games, as well as a number of others. So they're kind of doing something similar here, getting a lot of Indian developers into making a bunch of stuff. Yeah, they mentioned here Fist Forged and Shadow Tech, and Mutation M are some of those, as well as some upcoming ones like Boundary, Evo Tinction, Lost Soul Aside, Convalaria, and AI Limit. For the China ones. India Hero Project is looking to bring in Indian developers and help them get their games out there onto the console space through PlayStation's, you know, incubation program, which seems to do a pretty good job on this stuff. So yeah, they're taking applications for that stuff. That will be cool to see what comes out of this. Always good to have more developers out of these regions that we don't often see, you know, games out of them. So that's cool to see. Next up here, I got a thing to say, Brandon?
No, I'm good.
All right. Game Freak has a new game that they are working on. Looks definitely different than anything they've worked on in a while.
Yeah.
This one's being published by Private Division. Mm-hmm. They've shared one screenshot of this for this game called Project Bloom.
Yep.
That they say is an action-adventure IP that will launch during Private Division parent company Take-Two's fiscal year 2026.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to see this for at least a few more years.
Oh, yeah.
But hey, there seems like they're trying something new and different.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of a bigger budget to it and not being, you know, forced to hit, you know, very quick release dates like they've been doing for the Pokemon games.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see how this goes, but that'll be cool to see. They, despite the games that people probably know them most for, they've worked on a lot of non-Pokemon stuff over the years. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, Genesis games and such back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be cool to see them branch out and try more new stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess people just, there's just a whole generation of people don't realize that there was a Game Freak before Pokemon. Like, obviously, they hit upon Pokemon, and that's where most of their money lies now, but they put out a couple of solid titles before they put out the first Pokemon duo. So, yeah, I mean, I hope they still got it in them, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, people don't really realize that Nintendo doesn't own them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're an actual independent, like, studio. They're not a branch of Nintendo.
Yeah, in fact, Nintendo or the Pokemon Company.
Yeah, Nintendo actually, they have a three-way ownership of the Pokemon IP between Game Freak, the Pokemon Company, and Nintendo proper. But
So there you go. Something new that's. You won't see anything for probably for at least two more years.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what's next up here. Some potential bad news for Activision Blizzard.
Yeah.
As they are currently running headfirst towards a deadline for mandatory return to office in July.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be causing them to hemorrhage a lot of workers.
Oh, yes.
That's... one particular person who works at or works on the World of Warcraft, mm-hmm. producer Adam Kalaxigrav, who wrote a tweet thread in April saying, being loud about it because I've lost yet another person this week. We are creating crisis maps of what we can or cannot ship. Yeah. That is the loss of capacity we're facing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
And it's like, you know, this would be so easy if you just said, you know what? We're not going to do this whole back to the office thing. You can just keep working from home.
Yeah, especially because I've seen people say the C-suite people are allowed to work however they want.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you don't know, C-suite, that's all your chief people, your chief economic officer, or your CEOs, your COOs, all those people. That's your C-suite, mm-hmm. your higher-ups. But the people down below, no, you got to work in the office because, you know, that's how we do this all, but not the people getting paid the big bucks. They can just screw around and do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to definitely be affecting at least WoW, but probably the other teams as well as the people that are at most risk of, you know, being forced out of the company or having to make this, you know, decisions to leave and, you know, apply for other jobs and get the hell out of there.
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing. So, yeah, not a great time for Activision Blizzard right there.
Mm-hmm.
Letting a bunch of good people that have been helping them stay the course during the pandemic are being told to go eat dirt if they don't want to come in personally to the office.
Mm-hmm.
which a lot don't. Because it's almost like they can do the same work either way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go. The bad Activision Blizzard news for the week.
Yeah, you know, I just find it interesting that Activision Blizzard continues to find themselves in stories like this. Like, especially with this subject. I mean, like, for me in particular, I particularly enjoy working from the office, but then again, I don't have a family to take care of, and just working at from home for me just really isn't all that great. I much prefer what I have in the office. But that being said, like, you know, we just went through 2.5-3 years of, like, this kind of thing. Like, if you want to work from home, you should work from home. Like, you use whatever option for you makes sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I see the value in working in person and working in person with the team just because of what I do. But, like, you know, I understand that a bunch of people can do their job from home, and we've proven it these last few years. So unless they're trying to really cut costs and stuff like that, and, like, you know, it's I'm hearing it with Google. Like, Google is doing things like taking away their snacks and things like that, you know, which sucks for the people that come in. But at the same time, like, is this money that should be used in this area? Then again, is this something that is really taking away from the bottom? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, shareholders, employees, they all have to get their bonuses. But the most important thing is keeping the lights on and keeping your employees paid. And, you know, all this extra stuff just seems unnecessary. And it's just even more alarming, too. Like, these people are trying to close an acquisition with Microsoft. And you would think, especially after what Phil Spencer said with Redfall and its shortcomings, like, especially with him being the quote-unquote good guy of the industry, like, you would think, like, someone in his power would step in to just try to get things solved. But at the end of the day, they're not owned by Microsoft. So you have to wonder, like, what's going to happen, especially with these layoffs happening left and right with every company. And, like, you know, I hope these people leaving land on their feet, but I totally understand it. With the situation.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like companies that have been able to survive just fine with, you know, sort of the option to do either one.
Yeah.
Should just stick with it.
Yeah.
Unless you just hate those people so much that you don't trust them to keep working from home.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it would kind of seem to be cost beneficial in a lot of ways to keep it in that way, because I mean that means you don't have to spend as much on, like, office space and supplies and, you know, having to, you know, pay the utilities and stuff for that. But I don't know.
But yeah, they've been paying for that for the entire pandemic.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, I tell you what, like, if assuming this Microsoft thing closed, there's gonna be a whole lot of studios closed. Not exactly teams being let go, but a lot of wasted space just sold back. I know in my office, like, after our merger, like, we eventually closed down our studio, like, a couple years in. And again, we didn't, like, have any loss of staff, but there was just no point in keeping an office, state-of-the-art office open anymore if you're only serving. So that do make sense.
Yeah. And, like, the classic thing about offices is that is a means for controlling your employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know they're going to be there. You know, they're going to not have distractions to keep them from working on, you know, the things you want them to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Though, as you know, phones and the internet distracts people, it's not that foolproof of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with the commutes and all that, it's just a way to control these people and turn it into, you know, essentially an expensive daycare for adults.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you want to slack off at work, we'll slack off that.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go for the latest news on Activision Blizzard.
Mm.
How things are going over there. We'll end here with the latest update on Open Roads, the game that was being made by Fulbright Studios and Steve Gaynor as their co-founder. That at a certain point, Steve, there were allegations that Steve Gaynor had sort of created a very toxic atmosphere at Fulbright, leading to Annapurna Interactive kind of intervening and getting him to step down as the sort of head of the studio into more of a writing role, separate from everybody else. But He has written recently some sort of blog post updating people on saying that he has sort of learned a lot about his working relationship and such and how that has affected, you know, the Fulbright team and all that. But it's also said that the studio is no longer developing and representing Open Roads going forward with Annapurna Interactive sort of taking over the front-facing side of marketing. And it doesn't really explain the reasons behind that and the circumstances that led to this sort of split, but seems like that has been the thing that has been made here. Let's see. Yeah, after a great deal of consideration, it's just no longer Fulbright's place to represent Open Roads publicly going forward. It will be credited to the Open Roads team at launch. It won't be covered further here. As much as I wish the game the best when it does come out, if you join this newsletter hoping for fresh info on Open Roads, you should do yourself a favor and sign up for the Annapurna newsletter on that front. They've got you covered. It seems like they have made a divorce of sorts from Fulbright, maybe hired a bunch of the people that still wanted to keep working on the game in some capacity to a separate team. And sort of let, you know, those that still wanted to stay at Fulbright sort of do that. Potentially that's the way that I kind of interpret it. Mm-hmm. But who knows until this game's sort of closer to coming out and they can sort of talk about that stuff in more detail.
Mm-hmm.
That was potentially supposed to come out back in 2021, and obviously it still sounds like that's still going to be a ways away at this point. So we'll have to see sort of what that game looks like in its current states or whenever they are ready to reveal things. But at least we know with Annapurna Interactive, they're kind of willing to let things simmer until it's ready to actually go out there most of the time.
Mm.
So we'll see how this new team sort of takes over things.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first saw it, this is a game that definitely, it's a shame that it's been in the news for all the wrong reasons. You know, hopefully they can get on their feet and finish it and from there.
Yeah. I think that's going to do it for this week.
Right.
That's everything we've got to talk about. Thank you to Brandon and Dammer for joining this week.
All right.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and probably more Tears of the Kingdom to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
As we, you know, get to actually do things in a game and not just try to fumble around and making things and doing all the weird stuff in that game. So,
and I actually get to play it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, you get to see what
we're doing.
Yeah. And you've been ruined, Brandon. You'll see goats seeing all the shrines.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I will be.
So yeah, there you go for that. Thank you all for listening. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out. And select strangers that maybe will make dick monsters in Tears of the Kingdom and show them off to you as we get the tech for that stuff to improve over time.
Oh, God damn it. I'm looking at the screenshots right now. Son of a bitch, they really do look like it.
Yeah, they didn't.
The fire dicks? Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the shrines.
Oh, I don't even know what in ghost what a ghosty is, but I don't think I want to touch it either, so.
Yeah, if you look at the shrines, let's just say it's somebody doing something with a part of the body in ways that you would not think possible.
Yeah. Actually, it kind of looked, I'll be honest, the way that all of these are built, it kind of looks like that jar dude from Elden Ring bending over and doing it. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Just don't look up Goatsy.
Yeah, don't. It's not worth it, I promise you.
Yeah. You can maybe look it up on Wikipedia. I would imagine they don't show the picture there, but they might explain it to you.
I was going to ask how you spell it, but I'm going to leave it alone for now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the way you would think it's spelled.
No.
But yeah, that's as far as I'll go. But yeah, that's going to do it for the show this week. So thank you all for listening. We'll see you all next week. So have a good one. We'll see you next time.